Welcome to Master the Start, a podcast for young professionals where we interview business experts on how you can master the start of your life in business.
Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to this week's episode of Master the Start, episode number 21, presented by GoMahi.com. And because it's episode 21, we're going to do things a little differently today. We're going to switch it up a little bit. I'm actually going to be sitting down with one of my best friends, Brady Riesgraf, because we started a startup at the ripe young ages of 15 and 16. So I really wanted us to dive into what we believe made our startup successful, how we grew a company in the landscaping business at such young ages, and what we did right, what we did wrong, how we communicated, and a whole lot more. So this episode is a little unique, but I think you're going to really, really, really love it. So settle in, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, iHeart, or Google Play. Trust me, I see it. You're not subscribing. I'm watching. I see you listening. I see you downloading, but you are not subscribing to the podcast. So you need to do it today. Please, it'd mean the world. Also, please leave us a comment, especially on this episode. I just want to know if you liked the little switch in guests and how we kind of formatted it a little bit differently today, or if you just disliked it. Because if you liked it, we're thinking about doing an episode number two in the future and kind of going a little deeper into the startup world. So, as always, make sure you enjoy this week's episode of Master the Start. I'll talk to you in an hour. Ayo! What's up, Brady? Thanks for joining us on the Master the Start podcast. As you guys heard in the intro, we're switching it up a little bit today. Brady and I are going to go a little more in depth into the startup life and kind of our first venture that we tried to pull off together. So, hola, Brady. Say hello to the audience.
Hey, everybody. Hey, thanks for having me on, Bob. I'm excited to go through this one. This is going to be a fun one.
Oh, of course. This is going to be unique. So, let's just jump in. We started a company called Three Timbers when we were, what, like 15, 16? I have no idea.
I don't know how young we were either, but we were still munchkins back then.
Yes. What is it? What in the world did we do? And then let's hop into it.
Awesome. What did we do? I think maybe a better question to start is, what did we not do?
That is true.
But I think we primarily started out with the idea of landscaping, keeping houses clean, and then it turned into an all services, jack of all trades, tell us to help you move across the city and we'll do it for you. which worked really well, but ultimately we were looking to, I think, just like help the people around your area. Christmas Lake is where we primarily got started. And I think we started on like the very simple, like mowing lawns, laying, not sod. Sod was not the simple one. Laying like mulch and those sort of things. So very like, we need to put in labor hours, but need zero skill to do it. I think that's kind of what we started on. If you agree with that.
Oh, I definitely agree. We were a jack of all trades when maybe we shouldn't have been.
Yep.
So now we can go more in depth into our actual experience. So I just want to know out of the gate, because I think a lot of people look for their partners in crime in a sense when they start companies. How and at what point did you know that you and I were going to ultimately become a team and start something someday?
I think that's a really good question, because I remember, and this is the weirdest thing ever, but I remember the first time we actually met.
That is what I was going to bring up too. That's going to be my time. Yep.
So crazy. Like I can remember the entire night, and I remember exactly how it went down. And I just like, I don't know what time it was after that, but I remember the very first time we met, and there are very few people that I can say, like, I remember the first time I saw them. And I remember, and it was at, I think it was at Jessica Cook's house.
Yeah, but it started before that.
Did it start before? When was before that?
Okay, so I remember it too very clearly.
I want to hear this.
It was a Friday night. You and I both don't really love to party.
Oh my God, that's what it was.
Yep.
Oh my God. Tell the story. I think this is good.
Yes, and I'm just the random scrawny tall kid playing basketball in the gym, and it's nighttime. All of our friends are doing something fun, and the superstar hockey player, Brady Riesgraf, was up working out. And he came out of the workout room and looked at me all alone in the gym and decided, you know what? I'm going to go down and talk to this kid, maybe shoot a couple hoops before I leave. And we ended up shooting hoops. We had never met up to that point. And then we just shot hoops for a couple hours, legitimately opened up about everything in our life. And all of a sudden, we also brought up, you know, I was like, you know, Ashley and I, that's my wife now. I was like, we're kind of a thing. And he's like, you know what? Haley and I, we're kind of a thing, his girlfriend at the time. And Ashley and Haley were best friends. So at that point, we look at each other and we're like, you want to go to this party-like thing after this? Because neither of us want to be there. And we're both like, we both agreed. We're like, let's do this thing. Let's have our first little get-together. Let's go to this party and do it together. Because I don't know if either of us would have gone if it wasn't for each other, even though we just met each other 2 hours before that.
Yep. And that's nothing to do with the people at the party. It was just like, we just didn't want to be like.
Yeah. We just wanted to do things productive.
Yeah.
And we get to this party. We're legitimately there for 15, 20 minutes, and we were just done with it. So we just went off on our own, took the girls with us, and just went on this long walk. Through the golf course, so we could just continue our talk about life and what we wanted to do with our futures.
Yeah, that's a funny play right there, too, because I think two young kids, what were we, probably like 15 at that point? 14 at that point. And you've got these two really cute girls that we were really into. And instead of walking with them, we just like split off and just like did our own thing. But well, I honestly, that was amazing to me.
Because that's all we wanted to do. We just wanted to talk business and we wanted to talk future in sports, what we wanted to accomplish. That was it. That's all that interested us.
That was one of those life moments that you look back and you say, what if that didn't happen, you know?
Definitely.
And I think we would have crossed paths regardless, but it is amazing how that is exactly what happened. I'll go shoot hoops for 10 minutes. Like, I know this is like my girlfriend's best friend's, I don't know what you want to call it. Like, it wasn't boyfriend at the time, but I was like, she's into him. So at some point I'm going to have to hang out with this guy. Like, I might as well like break the ice for 10 minutes, go shoot hoops. And then like the weirdest thing, because at that time I shared no information with anybody, not my family, not my then girlfriend, like no one would I share information with. And we shot hoops for what? 3 hours. And
something
I was like
that.
My grandparents and my family and my life. And I was like, I left that gym and I was like, what the hell happened? Like, what happened there? But I honestly think that was the night, and I agree with you that we, like, I knew that if we, the very first time, I think you find that in people, and I don't think it comes around often, like whether it's a partner or like a very good friend, you like your wife, like, you know, the first time that you see him that like there's something special there. And that was one of those times that I think, I don't know if you want to call it seize the moment, but I know when I left there, I was like, shit, this is someone I haven't found someone else like this. And there's something like special there.
Definitely.
In a not romantic way.
Yes, definitely. At that point, we start a company. The next question I kind of want to get into is, with us both having close to $0 in our bank account, and we spent no money on marketing, how in the world did Three Timbers get business? What did we do?
What did we do? I think we put on our overalls and grabbed our work pail and we went to work. I mean, we had some long days. And I even remember right at the start, we would work for, and this is like when we were 15 years old, we would work for 10 hours and then we would go back to your house and we would think for 4 hours. Like, what are we going to do tomorrow? How are we going to get our next customer tomorrow? And I think people don't do that, even in like emerging businesses that are legit. Ours was like, we have four customers. How do we keep our four customers before we burn out? And how do we build so that we have a week of work so we don't have to take another job on top of this? But I remember what we did is everything that we did was face to face, like both between you and me and between our customers. Like, all of the first customers that we got, it wasn't sending flyers. Ultimately, like, we got to that point where we were stable enough to where we could send flyers and spend money on marketing, but we would legitimately go ring a doorbell. Do you remember when we got chased off that lady's property?
Yes, definitely.
We legitimately got chased off a lady's property. And I think if we weren't doing that, we weren't doing it right. We like, she didn't want our services, I guess. She didn't even hear what they were and she didn't want them.
And to piggyback off of that, legitimately anyone interested in starting anything, you can start with $0. We had nothing. We made probably the cheesiest little flyers ever. Microsoft Word, printing them off of the, I don't know, parents' printer.
Yep.
Then walked around with a notebook and went door to door And we found people that absolutely hated us, swore at us, yelled at us, but we also found people that absolutely loved us. Yep. And I know me personally, every door we went up to, my heartbeat was beating so fast. I was so nervous, and everyone's like, who has this door? Who's talking here? And we divvy it up every single time. It was probably like 80, 90 degrees out, so I'd be dripping sweat, so nervous. And then you'd have the ones where people would be having dinner outside because we would need to do it when we were done with work. So we'd work 10 to 12 hours. It'd be like 5, 6, 7, and then we'd start going out around the lake and going door to door. People would be on the porch with their family. They'd have to get up, come to us while we were staring at them across the yard. And we'd be like, oh no, this is a bad start. And we would just keep refining our pitch.
Like every time.
It was always different. And we discussed it after every time. We gave each other so much crap for how we said things. And we worked on really, what are we going to hit home on? And I don't even think we really knew. We didn't know the terminology at that point. But we focused on how are we going to hit these pain points in our next pitch. Mm-hmm. And if it's not the pain point, how are we going to hit on saving them time?
Yep.
Like, what are we going to offer them when we have nothing?
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that's really good. And I think one thing that we did, and God, I thought I was so, I remember walking up to those doors and I was like, I am the dumbest person in the world for doing this. Like, you feel so stupid. Because when they ask like, oh, how long have you been working? Like, how long have you been doing this? You're like, oh, we started a month ago. Like, why should we choose you over the landscaping business that has done this for 25 years? Well, we'll try and we might fail. And we promise we'll get it done. And people like, I think people did appreciate like the genuine nature of our pitch. Like I don't think we ever went to a place, and granted, we took on things that we had never done. But I would say, I don't know if there was a time when we would lie and say like, oh, we've done that before, we know how to do that. We would legitimately, I remember telling people like, I'll be honest with you, we've never done that, but if you're like willing to trust us and take us on, we will give it a try. And I remember legitimately saying that to people, because at the start I was like, people are going to laugh in our face. Like, you have these kids coming up that are like, we've never done this work. Yes, we've never handled a chainsaw. Let us cut down all your trees. Like, but people were very open to, I think, like the genuine nature of it. That was one thing that I noticed. And then the other thing was about refining the pitch. I think that was a really good one, because we did not have, and I don't know if this was good or bad, but it worked for us. We didn't have like a legitimate pitch. It was just like, who's talking? And we said something different every single time. And I think one of the reasons that might have worked, and I wouldn't tell people to go do this, but we would find things like as we were walking up to the house, like, oh yeah, I noticed like your mulch was like down on this side. Like, we could do that for you. Don't worry. Like, it would take us an hour. We'd be happy to just like knock that out for you while you're at work. And people are like, wow, that'd be great. Like, we would love that. Cause most big companies would come in, and if there was only like 2-3 hours of work, they'd be like, no, F that. Like, we would never do that. So I think that was like a big sell point for us, and that we would just recognize what could we solve for this customer at each house.
Definitely. And I think this is a good spot to transfer into the power of yes. And I think like a lot of people bring up the power of no, right? Because everyone gets to this point in this career where they can't say yes to everything. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely a point in everyone's career where they need to say yes to almost everything. And I just think, I would say we actually ended up doing well in growing the business to multiple employees and doing this over and over because we were so good at saying yes. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think the power of yes is, especially in Three Timbers world?
Oh my God, Three Timbers, the power of yes should have been on our brochure. if you ask us to do it, we will not say no. And I think that was honestly what made us grow at the start. And I actually vividly remember, because this is something I think you are ambition, and I was calculated and thoughtful. And I could be wrong in that, but definitely, I think that's where we balanced ourselves out really well, is you 100% every single time. Like, we had, when it was you and me and Joey right at the start, like, you wanted to have 45 customers. And I was like, Bobby, if we have 45 customers, we're going to do terrible work everywhere. And you're like, okay, yeah, like, that makes sense. But can we get 45 customers next summer if we added 2 people? It's like, oh, okay, well, that would work. Like, we found the in-between of what would work. Because I was very much in the mindset of, let's do everything very calculated. Let's do it right. I would rather have 5 customers and serve them incredibly than like adding and growing right away, but that would have put a halt on our business because we wouldn't have been growing. And then you had the ambition side of it. It was like, we can do more. We can do more. How can we do this? So I think that's what worked out really well. But the power of yes for us was we were willing to learn anything that we needed to do. That's at least my mindset. And I think you were the same way, because I legitimately remember YouTubing videos on people's driveways, like trying to figure out when we were doing jobs for the first time. And like, they weren't jobs necessarily that we could have done really poorly, but it was just, we had never done it before. So like, I remember like power washing, and like when we did a couple where we were recoating pool decks or patios, and like, that's something that we had never done before. And we would have the bucket and the materials, and we would YouTube it and be like, how the hell do we do this? You know? But I think for us that really worked, because we were in a space where we weren't taking a huge risk, and we were telling people that like, we are willing to take this on if you're willing to take us. And that's ultimately what grew us. That's my opinion. I'm curious what you think about that.
And I agree, but I think it's so fascinating that at that age, we didn't see it as a large risk. I think that's what made us unique, is we didn't see it as risky. We could fail epically and we were going to be okay. So we took on jobs. I still remember taking on jobs where we had never cut down a tree before. And we showed up to this massive house, and the guy goes, can you cut down like 15 trees on this sloping hill that will take them into the lake?
And these aren't like fig trees. These are like massive, like 60-year oaks. Like,
yes. So for all you out there, they're like 70 to 100 foot trees. And some of them are near his house. Like, we're talking $6 million home. And he just asks, he goes, do you guys cut trees? And it's kind of like, not really, but we'll do it. And it's like,
we have a chainsaw, like, we're willing to do it.
I don't even think we had a chainsaw at that point.
We might not have.
I remember we had to look up all these things on how to fell a tree right, how to make the cuts right. And I remember, even in the moment, I felt some pressure. Where it was like, dripping sweat, you were so nervous. You're like, if this tree goes down the wrong way, we are screwed. Yet we still committed. We committed every single time. And even when it came to like lake weeds, one of the big things that our company did is we did lake weed removal from lakes, and we would scuba dive and pull the weeds, but it didn't start that way. So all of these companies out there were scuba diving and they were all professional. And the first couple of clients we got, we legitimately went out with snorkels and we had people stand on top of us so we could go to the bottom of the lake and pull the weeds by hand. And then come up and just hand them to the guys and they'd swim them to the dock. Took forever. We must have looked ridiculous. But we kept saying yes and we kept trying to learn. And if we wouldn't have said yes, we would have never learned and we would have never grown our company. And the last part about that is, and I think Brady brought this up, like, we were the perfect mix because I was very ambitious and he was very logical. And there were points, I still remember points in the summer or in the springtime, we would hire like 10 people and we would have zero work. And it would be like, yes to every person that needed a job. It'd be like 10, 12, yes, come aboard, we'll hire you. And then it would be like, oh crap, we need to say yes to a lot of jobs because we need to find a lot of work for these people.
Yep.
So that allowed us to just grow really fast. But actually having that ambition also forced us to grow fast and forced us to change our processes to fit our growth. Yep. We didn't have an option. We needed to learn on the fly.
No, I agree with that. Everything that we learned, I mean, we started with maybe three tasks. Like, we had a mower. We didn't personally have a mower, but you and I, our families had mowers. Like, we had a mower, we had a weed whacker. Outside of that, I mean, we had rakes for beaches. We can rake your beach. We'll bring a rake. Like, we had brooms and shovels. But other than that, we had absolutely nothing. So we were taking on everything. And it was like from mulch to pulling a bed of poison ivy weeds. Oh. We can get to that if we have time. But legitimately anything. And we were doing beaches. And I can't imagine how ridiculous we looked doing some of this stuff, because we were on like these giant properties. We're using like push mowers. And like, we had to look like idiots, but the fact that we were willing to take those on, I think showed people what we were willing to do and showed ourselves what we were willing to do. So every time we learned a new task, we could take a step above that, because the task that we had just learned, we never knew before, and that job worked out. So let's take it a step further. Let's try that again. Let's see what we can do on the next one. And I think you brought up a really good point that I want to touch on, which is the fact that we were committed to it. I'm not sure, and I could be totally wrong here, but in the seven, eight years that we were together, I don't know if there was ever a time when we called a customer back and said, actually, we can't do that. I think like every single time we said yes to someone, we figured it out, whether it was like, we need to call up an expert that actually does this and tell us how to do it. We need to get someone else on board. We need to hire five people for this next 2 weeks. Like, we always got the job done and we were committed to it. And I think that's one thing that could have sank us, because there are plenty of times when I wanted to call people back and be like, there's no way. Like, there's just no way. It's me and him, and like, there's no way we can do this job in 2 weeks. Because we would say, we had people, I remember like a big one was 4th of July or birthday parties in the summer. And people would, it would be June 20th, and they would say, I need my entire house rehauled by 4th of July. But we also have 12 other customers at this point. And you're like, how are we supposed to do this? But every single time, we were committed to the fact that we told this person we could get it done, so we're going to make sure and get it done. Whether that means hiring on five new people, whether that means you and me are working from 6 a.m. till 10 at night when the sun goes down.
I still remember we would work and finish jobs with headlights. We'd have to run places and continue with a light on.
Yep. Turn the car lights on and face it down the hill. I remember we had a lot of jobs on the waterfront that was like that, because I remember when we would do beaches, your feet get so cold walking in the cold sand. And when it's like 10 at night and you're just like bare feet walking on a beach, it's not great. But I remember we would finish up like that, and then we knew the next morning, like, we were right back at it. And I don't think either of us ever had a problem with it. And that's why it worked so well.
We loved it. And I think that's what makes some, I don't think this describes every successful entrepreneur, successful executive, etc. But I think those people that are successful really love what they do. And even when they're grinding like that every day and it should suck, it's really fun.
Yep.
I thought it transferred into the next question, because I was curious, do you think that's what allowed us to make Three Timbers successful at such a young age? Or do you think it was a couple of other factors too?
I think it was a lot. Like, I think we got really, I think the fact that we were so committed to things and we were always going to put them through was important. I think the fact that we were willing to work 16-hour days as 15-year-old kids, because like we weren't concerned about going to the house party and all that stuff. Like, we wanted to spend our time doing that, and we felt like that was growing us. And I think one place that we got really lucky is we had a partnership that we wanted to be together anyways. So if we were working together 16 hours a day, like, it was either we worked together 16 hours a day, or we were going to spend all day together. We were going to have to take a job where we were spending all day doing other stuff, and then we'd have to find 2 hours at the end of the night to be together. You know what I mean? So that was one thing for me, I know, because I know at 15, before that, I think we were both doing landscaping-esque stuff, whether it was mowing lawns, doing mulch, like just small jobs on our own. And I think that's kind of how we ended up pairing up at some point. But I know if I would have been doing that on my own 2 years in, working 14 hours a day, it would have been a lot easier for me to cut off, get burnt out from it. But the thing was, at the end of the day, we were doing it together. So we got to spend 16 hours a day together. And I think we both like the challenge of, what can we make this? Like, what can we really grow this into? What can we accomplish with this? Because I think we had no reason for us to be successful. Like, we were just two 14, 15-year-old kids with no tools, no experience in the area. And how many landscaping companies are in the Southwest Metro? Like, countless numbers of like very well-developed landscaping companies. And we were also doing this in an area where people had the ability to pay for the nice landscaping company to come in. So I think we didn't have like a big reason to be like, wow, this should be successful. And we both took that as, all right, let's see if we're working 14, 16 hours a day and we're like serving every client need and we're taking on these new jobs and we're learning, what can we actually do with this?
And I actually think our biggest asset that actually made us unique was our ability to communicate with our customer and our people skills. So like you were just saying, there's no reason we should have gotten the contracts we got. There's just no reason. I mean, yes, we provided good work, but it was inefficient. We took forever. And we just didn't look professional. We were showing up sometimes and just beater Suburbans,
cut off t-shirts,
no logos, no nothing. And I still remember we legitimately grew every year for like 7 years without any marketing. And I think the reason that was is because you and I loved the customer. We loved them more than any dollar they could give us. Yep. You and I would go weeks without invoicing anybody because we just didn't care about the money. Weeks. They would just sit there. And then we felt so guilty because it'd be 3 months later and we're like, oh crap, we should really send an invoice.
Yep.
But I also remember what we would do is we would work from 7 in the morning to 8 at night, and then we would go meet with potential customers, and we were so fascinated in learning from them and fascinated in their lives that we would sit there and talk to them from 8 to maybe 10 at night. Like, it would get dark, and we would have their families out on the driveway. We would all be out there together just talking about anything and everything. We would have potential customers show us their cars, let us into their house. Like, they had never met us before, and they are letting us into their personal lives instantly. Mm-hmm. Because we genuinely came off with, we love you and we want to make your life better, and we are the outlet in which you can share anything with us, and we're just going to be there for you. We are now your friends. We aren't here as a service. We're here as your buddies.
And I think that's what it was. Is it's actually funny you bring that up, because that was the first thing that I was going to say, but I didn't know what route you wanted to take with that, because like, I think that's a personal thing, is that we were very good at not even interacting with people, but making people feel comfortable and welcome. And that's like where our people skills come in. And I think that's hands down what we would do, what you just said, is our biggest thing. I remember so many times when we would finish up a job at 8 at night, and you and me are in white t-shirts because like, we had no company logos, we had no anything, covered in dirt, head to toe, like head to toe in dirt. And people would be eating dinner, and then they would invite us into their house. Like, no, it's okay. Like, I see that your shoes have 3 pounds of dirt, but seriously, come in. Like, here's my wife, here are my kids. And it's like, what is going on here? And I think we handled that very well, because I think a lot of people would not want to be in that situation of, oh my God, I'm 15 years old and I have to interact with this family. But we turned into it wasn't even so much of a customer relationship as we grew like friendships and relationships with these people. I mean, we had people asking us to give lessons for basketball, asking their kids to give lessons for hockey. And these are just, we would never come to people and even talk about this. But in those 1 hour, 2 hours when we would see our customers, those are the conversations we were having. It wasn't, we would send an invoice or drop off a check. And honestly, I think that was the part that we struggled with the most, was charging people at the end of the day, because we were truly looking to just help them in their daily lives. Because I think a lot of the people that we were serving were incredibly, incredibly busy. And if we could give them back an extra hour or 2 hours of their day, or an extra 4 hours of their week, that's what they saw value in. And I think, if anything, thinking back on it, that was our pitch. Our pitch was, I see that this is like, you might need help here. Like, we could do it. We could give you those 3 or 4 hours back. And if it takes us 8 hours, we'll still do it for you. Like, we will do it at any cost, even if we don't know how to do it, if that would help you out. And I think that's what people saw value in, was that we were coming to help them out, not just, hey, we're going to do this for you, we can do like mulching. It was, what can we help you accomplish? Whether that was move their house supplies, whether that was come in and do sheetrocking on their house or lay carpet. If we could give them that time back, that's what they were, I think, people enjoyed about us. And that we were coming to have those conversations, not just dropping off a check, not just sending an invoice, but every time we would sit at people's houses 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night after we worked 14-hour days. And I think people saw that and said, wow. I mean, you could tell we were drained at the end of the days. We had people, I remember when we would go have those conversations, because we would go at the end of the day and we would knock on doors again, or we would meet with people that we had already knocked on doors with and say, hey, we don't know when we'll be there, but we'll be there at 8:30 at night. And I think people think that's something of value, because how many other people in general take after 8 p.m. and say, we'll come and meet with you and see what you need to be. You tell us what you need to be done, and we'll make sure it gets taken care of.
Yeah, and I think the people skills, and I know that there are older professionals listening to this too, so to make it applicable to them too, I think it transferred very well when we treated our employees that same way as well. We were employing our friends and we were employing kids much younger than us, but we always looked at them like they were on the same level as us. Every single day, we would ask for their advice, their input on a project. We'd joke around with them the same way. We were one big family. Our customers were a part of our family. Our employees were a part of the family. And we were all on the same level no matter what. I definitely think that was a huge pro. And I think it saved us from our employees just walking away. Because as Brady said, we legitimately sucked at sending invoices because we just loved our work too much. And that made it so employees had to wait a month and a half without getting paid. And I think the only thing that kept them around, I mean, think about it. We were able to keep employees at our company working for us every single day, 12 to 14 hour days without getting paid. Just because we tried to create an environment that was so much fun for them that they ultimately still wanted to come to work. I mean, a few of them still complained about the paycheck, but it allowed us to do things a little differently. And it also trickled down to our employees and allowed us to create a unique image of our company. Because we had so many clients come up to us and be like, your employees are just the best. When are they coming around again? Because they loved our staff. Because they were maintaining that same energy that we had every single day. So I think that's really important. If you're leading employees at any point in time, just be their best friend. Like, stop trying to be a boss. I mean, definitely you got to structure. You have to create structure for them and you have to easily interpret the vision, but you also have to be a friend because you have to make work fun.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. That's something that I definitely did not recognize until it was over, was the fact that we had people that would work for 6 weeks without a paycheck. And yes, like, there were obviously people that complained because that's ridiculous. But we legitimately had people working day in and day out, like sometimes 10, 12 hour days, and they would come back the next year knowing that it was going to happen. And we were like, that was something that we didn't think was a big deal because we were okay with it. But we knew that at the end of the day, we were going to make it happen, make it work. When you have other people that you're relying on, I think that's different. So I think that speaks volumes to what you were just saying and having people on the same level. I think two things off of that. One that you noted, I think one thing that our employees liked that gave them the energy to do what they did and why we were so successful and why we had people asking, where are your, like, when are your employees coming back? I really want so-and-so to come back. I liked talking with them, was because I think we gave them the trust and the power to say, you make the judgment call here. Like at the start of the day and the end of the day, we were always meeting with our clients. You and me were going house to house, regardless of what jobs we were, just to say, hey, how did this work out? If something wasn't right, like, how can we make it better for tomorrow? How can we inform our group better? We were always making those things. And I think that was one thing that helped us because we had that direct line. But at the end of the day, we weren't, a lot of the times we had to be meeting with customers or getting new customers. And then we had three teams in the metro area that were doing work on their own. And these are kids that were even younger than us. So, like, I mean, at that time they were probably what, 15, 16 years old, but we were kind of giving them part of the business saying, like, at the end of the day, like, we're not going to be there. You're welcome to call us at any time, but you can make the judgment call. You should be able to communicate directly with the customer. It shouldn't have to be us. And if they come out and ask for something, you can change it as need be. And I think that trust and power gave our employees, like, the enthusiasm and the feeling that they were contributing to something that was bigger than them. The second thing on that was, I think we were willing, and what our employees appreciated and why they're willing to work so long was because you and me were willing to get our hands dirty at any time. Like, there was no job that we were above, exactly. And you touched on this. We were willing to do anything and we put ourselves on the same level. So whether it was Brady and Bobby, you have a job that's going to make you dig a ditch for 2 weeks, like, we were willing to do it. And I think a lot of business owners would take that as, F that, that's a terrible job. Like,
let's go, boys. Let's keep this energy up. Like, we're getting pumped. We're working hard. We're only 10 hours in. We got five left. Let's do this thing. And yep. Even when we take on projects, you know, when we say we worked long hours, like, we really meant it. Like, we were taking on anything. We would get done with work at 10 some night. And this happened one time. We get a call after we get home at about 10 o'clock And one of our clients goes, hey, there's flooding in one of our buildings. Can you get in there with shop vacs with your entire team? And we call up all of our guys and we go, hey, we pumped them up a little bit. Like, who's ready to get back to work at 11 at night? And let's hang out and hang in there all night long. Like, let's do this thing. And we actually got most of our team to be fired up about it.
Amazing.
And that is what you could do within, no matter what kind of structure you're working in. But if you bring that energy every single day, that makes everyone else super energetic about the work they're doing, which I think is awesome.
I remember that day in particular was the epitome of what we were just talking about. Because I think that was one of the days when we already had it was 14 or a 16 hour day. Mm-hmm. Like, we were up crack of dawn. We finished at 10 and we called and we got six or eight of our employees to work from 10 to like 2 at night, literally vacuuming floors that had flooding in them. And I think that was just a testament to what we were willing to accomplish and the fact that we were willing to go back and how bought in everybody was.
Yeah. So what do you think you and I did well as partners, and what did we do absolutely horribly as partners?
Between ourselves?
Yes.
In general.
Ourselves.
What we did really well, and I don't think we try to do this, but I think we balanced each other out really well. What we were talking about earlier, we were the give and take on each other, and I think we were always watching out for each other before we were watching out for ourselves, and that might be me looking back on it, but I truly believe that that's how it was when we were doing these jobs. Like, we were doing them until whatever time of the night, no matter what. And if someone called me and said, hey, we need this job, and I said yes, you were always okay with like, all right, let's, even if it takes till 10 p.m., I'll get this done. Same thing with you. Like, if we took something on and one of us like wasn't in the loop, it was just a phone call that said, hey, we need this done, someone would always take it on and we knew that it would be okay with the other person. Like, I trust their judgment. I know that they'll do what's like in the best nature for our company, what's in the best nature for both of us. So I think we definitely had that like trust down very well. One thing that I think we did really bad, and this obviously like speaks to the end, which I think you have a question about, but communication. And I don't think that was like us trying to be bad or not wanting to communicate. I just think we didn't recognize the importance of it. And that would be my take of it, is that I think we communicated really well with each other. And I think we communicated really well, like when we were together, we knew what was going on, and to our customers. And I think when we lost that is when we had troubles. Because I think at the start, I think we were together so much that it was tough to not communicate well, because we were together all the time. And like everything we did was together, whether that was at school, whether that was on the job. But I think that was one thing that we actually did well at the start. And I think we always communicated pretty well with customers. But once we lost it between each other is when we had a downfall. And that's my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're pretty much on the same page with what we did right. I mean, we're not going to go in depth and say we did a great job keeping track of finances, or we did a great job purchasing trucks or materials, because we didn't. We just did it. Mm-hmm. And we definitely never got the best deals. We didn't even try. We just wanted to make things work. So I think we were really good as teammates because we were really good at trusting each other. Yep. Like you just said, we knew no matter what, the other person wasn't going to screw the other. It didn't matter. If it was financially, if it was time, we were in it 50-50.
Yep.
It doesn't matter what the mistake was. I could have messed something up horribly and we could have lost a bunch of money on it, but Brady was going to pay for that too. And there was no blame. It was just, that's learning. We move on. And I wish I applied that more to my life today even, because thinking about how willing we were to learn together constantly and take that risk together constantly and make ourselves feel uncomfortable together constantly, that was awesome. Like, that was really awesome. That's what we did well together.
Just really quick, I think like a good point of that was, and now that I'm thinking about this, is the day we ruined the deck on the hill. Mm-hmm. Like, that was one of those days when no fault of anyone's, it happened. And we both like, without hesitation, yes, whatever it takes, like we'll work without pay and we're both going to be there as long as it takes. It would be really easy at that point to be like, not a chance. I'm going to work for another like week, go buy the materials, pay for it myself. Like, we could have just left and been like, it happened, like you trusted us, whatever. We legitimately said we've never done this before. And after it happened, we took full responsibility and we both stepped up and said, we'll fix this at any cost. We apologized. You don't have to pay us for any labor hours. But neither of us even for a second thought, no, maybe we shouldn't do that. It was both like, all right, whatever hour you put in, I'm putting in, and whatever dollar you put in to sync on this, I'm doing the same thing.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think what we did really poorly is the same thing, communication. And I think this is where we'll kind of get into our little breakup and what happened. So we were running the company successfully for probably like 5 years at this point, maybe five, 6 years. Yeah. And I think midway through college, we kind of started to break apart a little bit just because our communication was, I guess it would be non-existent because we were running a company with many employees and we weren't even talking to each other for like a week or 2 weeks at a time. Yep. And that was just not sustainable. Not only was it the communication, I think it really came down to more of the vision. At that point, I believed I was a purebred entrepreneur and that's what I was going to do. So no matter what, I wanted to run companies. So I had one vision where no matter what, I want to keep Three Timbers going and I want to keep growing the business while I start other companies. And Brady at that point was pursuing medicine. And in his mind, I believe he had a vision of I'm going into medicine. This isn't a long-term thing. I can't always put in 16 hours a day. And because we didn't have the same vision, I believe we fought a lot on what we should be doing. And that's where our communication fell apart because mentally, as a leader, I couldn't mentally understand why at that point you weren't putting in 18 hours a day like I was. When the truth was, you couldn't put in 18 hours a day because you were doing actual things that had to do with medicine. Like you had to work on school after. Yeah. And I couldn't justify that. I needed us to be doing the same thing. And I blamed you for that instead of creating a vision that we could both follow.
Mm-hmm. I 100% no, that's actually a great point. And I don't think that probably didn't come in until like when things started getting serious with like, okay, I need to buckle down with medical school. So that was probably like year six, maybe like going into that once we started getting like a good amount of employees, like 10, 12 employees, which is when we should have been communicating the most. And I think that also was testament to both of our schedules were getting so much busier. So the first thing that went, especially when we were at different colleges, like high school, it's super easy because we're seeing each other all day, every day, and we know our schedules, and we're doing the same sort of thing. And then college, we were on such different schedules that after like, what was that, 2 years, we were both at probably the peak of our school time when we had the most work. You had startups ramping up. I had medical school ramping up. And the first thing to go was our communication between each other because – and I almost think that it was because of how much we trusted each other. It was like, well, we can go 2 months without talking because we know at the end of the day we'll get it figured out. And at the end of the day, we would get it figured out. But the problem was you can't do that with an emerging business. You know what I mean? And I think you wholeheartedly agree. With the vision part, I mean, 100%, at that point I was dead set on medical school. So I knew that come a year and a half, there was no way I could put any time into it, you know? I wouldn't have any time. So it was tough for me to justify like the long haul approach, even though, as you said, we definitely could have made that work. Actually, I want to add on one thing that you said because, and I could be wrong with this, but this is something that I noticed personally, and I think we can maybe both speak to it, but maybe not. And I think one thing that came with the communication, once we stopped communicating in that like year five, year six-ish window, was at some point, I think we, both of us, to some extent, not fully, started thinking about the business over each other. So I think like at the whole time up to that, like no matter what happened at the end of the day, even if the business tanked tomorrow, we screwed a job and we lost 100 grand and like we were out with it, you and me were in it together. And I think once we stopped communicating, all we were thinking about was we were thinking about the business before we were thinking about the welfare of each other. So it was, I don't know what they're doing. I don't know. They don't know what I'm doing. And I'm just going to make a decision based on where I think I can make the best impact for our business, not what's best for my partner. And I think we both did that to some extent, whether or not we thought it at the time. I think that definitely came in when the communication stopped.
Definitely. And we could definitely go into this forever, but the director of the Master of Start podcast will lose his mind if he has to edit hours and hours. Legitimately, quick summary. I'm giving you guys all this quick summary because I think Brady and I will do another one of these so you guys can hear the rest of the journey and what unfolded in a podcast down the road. If you guys give us good feedback. Eventually, we split apart. We didn't talk to each other forever, and we had to figure out a way to basically rebuild our friendship, and now we're rebuilding companies. So we'll get into that in the future on another podcast, but what we do have to do, and I hope you guys like that little teaser, what we do have to do is we have to cover our quick fire questions, because we do this with every guest, and that means both of us need to do it too. Does that sound good to you? Would you like to do another podcast in the future if people like it?
Yeah, I think so. I think people would really like that story too. Because yes. To be honest, that was probably the biggest learning lesson is how we got from disastrous breakup, if you want to call it that, to we are now rebuilding companies together. And like we're probably closer than we've ever been.
Yes.
I don't know.
Another good teaser. Nice.
Yep.
All right. Quick fire question number one. What skills does a young professional need to have straight out of college?
The biggest one, and I think you touched on this, is asking for opportunities. And that's the same as saying yes. So my thing is, if you want to get promoted, if you want to take on that new job, if you think you deserve more, you think you should be doing something else, ask for it. I think people are so scared to ask for it. And that's not to say I'm in the office at 9 and I leave at 3 every day, but I think I should be promoted. I'm saying if you're putting in the hours and you're doing the work that you think is consistent with what brings you to the next level, ask for it. Whether it's asking your customers for more, whether it's asking your boss or whoever for more, I think people are really, really scared to hear no. So people don't step up when they think that they deserve something. And I think people miss so many opportunities because of that. So I think asking for opportunities, asking for what you think you deserve is an immensely important trait. And that's not telling someone something. That's genuinely having an open conversation and saying, these are the reasons why I think I should have this. But if you don't bring it up, I think a lot of people expect that they should know that and they should be able to read your mind. And that's obviously not true.
Yeah. Mine is actually pretty much piggybacks off of that perfectly, because you said you almost need to look for that no. Like, you need to risk it. So you hear someone say no to your ask. And I think a lot of people just look at that as risk and potential failure, when they should really look at it like that is learning. Mm-hmm. You need to look for knowledge. So I think what young professionals really need out of college is this deep desire to learn more, deep desire to really perfect their craft. And do anything, put in any amount of work that involves learning and forcing themselves to be uncomfortable to explore that craft further and become better at it.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think that's perfect.
The second one is, what do you believe needs to be sacrificed to become successful?
This might get a little bit of pushback. Not from you, but from people out there. And this is my personal note, but I think you have to give up all the sexy stuff. And what I mean by that is, I mean, you don't need to be going out buying $150 shirts and $200 pairs of pants and a $70,000 car or a $100 dinner when you're starting. Whatever it is, you can sacrifice it. And I think people get really caught up either when they start off and they start actually making profit, making revenue, getting customers. They think like, oh, I can live this extra lifestyle, or I need to fill this vision. And I think all the sexy stuff needs to go. I think going to the clubs at 2 at night or whatever it is, getting bottle service, getting a table. And obviously that's not the life I live. So I can't speak on behalf of it, but I know people that do. And I think these are major detriments to, if you actually want to make something successful, it's got to be you, who you are through and through. And I don't think you need to be getting the sexiest house and the nicest clothes and everything else and spending all that money. I think, and it's not about money. I think it's just doing what you need to do and focusing on what's important instead of the more superficial things.
I couldn't agree with that more. And I also believe on top of that, really what it comes down to and what you're explaining is you need to truly want it. So yeah. When you truly want it and you're truly willing to put in the time, that is when you have to give up that stuff. Mm-hmm. When you're putting in 16, 17 hours a day, you have to give up the video games. You have to give up the TV. You have to give up going out with your friends every night. Mm-hmm. And that is not easy. It sucks. And if you believe you're going to become successful without putting in the time, I'm sorry, but history is not on your side. Because if you look at all of the most successful people, they put in the time. Even though it looks glamorous now because they made it, you have no idea what they went through to get to that point. It really just comes down to how bad you want it. And I think a lot of people, business professionals in particular, they believe they want it, but when they actually try to add something to their lives to get to that point, they eat into other time, except the time they need to eat into. Perfect example. I sat down with someone and I was mentoring them, and they're running this startup, and he puts in maybe 40 to 50 hours a week in this startup, and he wants to start a side hobby project to make money. I asked him, I was like, how many hours are you putting into your company already? Your main company is like 40, 50 hours. I was like, ooh, how are you going to beat out the huge companies when you're only putting in 40 to 50 hours? And he's like, oh no, it's fine. It's fine. I'm putting in 40 to 50 and I got time for my side hobby project. I was like, oh great. So are you going to put 30 hours in on top of that? So you'll be working 80, 90 hour weeks. He's like, oh no, it's going to eat into the 50 hours that I work on my main company. Yep. I was like, see, that's not how it works. Like, you need to give up other time. And that's just the truth. Success is not, as Brady said, it's not defined by how much money you have. It's defined by happiness. Brady and I, we get very happy, very, very happy, joyful, happy, smiles, laughs, when we are building companies or building services or products for people to enhance their lives. That's what makes us happy. That is our hobby. That is what we love to do. But you have to be self-aware enough to know what you love to do and know that you need to sacrifice certain things to do what you love.
Couldn't have said it better.
So last question, then we'll wrap this baby up. What is one life hack young professionals should apply to their lives this week, right now?
This is my favorite one. And I think it's the best question to end it on. Go do it. I'm sick of people, and I think we hear this all the time, like, oh, I really want to try this. Oh, I wish I could do this. Like, I want to get this new opportunity. I want to start this company. I want to learn this hobby. But I don't have time right now. So like, I'm gonna do that like in the summer. Like, I'm gonna do that over Christmas break. Like, I'm gonna do that when I get a chance in 2 months. Go do it. There's tomorrow. Tomorrow never comes. Tomorrow is never gonna come. And I mean that in the sense of, every time you say tomorrow, you're losing a day on whatever it is that you want to do. So whether you're in the workplace, whether you're a student working in the summer, whether you're building your own business right now, go out and do it. Whether it's a new skill, whether it's a new hobby, whether it's starting up a new company, you need to do it. And you're never going to know what you can accomplish, what you can get done, how successful you can be if you don't try it. Because I think so many people get stuck on the fact of, I don't know if I could do that. I'm so busy right now. You need to go do it. And if you don't go do it or go try, you're never going to learn. So go out, start learning these skills today. Work on that hobby that you want to work on. Set aside 10 hours a day. And I understand what Bobby just said is that's going to cut out some of the time that you have for other stuff. But if you really care about it and you really want to learn these things and develop these things and become successful in your own mind, it's never going to happen if tomorrow is the day for everything. So go do it today, whatever it is.
I agree. And that was actually going to be mine. And just to make it a little more actionable on top of that, legitimately, if you're interested in selling shirts, go make a site on Wix tomorrow. Start the process. If you want to get into real estate and you know nothing about real estate, pick up a book and read the Million Dollar Real Estate Investor. If you want to get into tech, there are free sites out there everywhere. Pick up that site and do one course this week. In this specific moment, when you're listening to this podcast, there's something that came to your mind that you want to do, write it down right now and spend at least 1 hour tomorrow working on it. Set a timer, let that timer go for 60 minutes. Even if you don't make a lot of progress, at least you put 60 minutes into that thing you wanted to accomplish. So make that your big task of the week, your big actionable goal, and don't let anything get in your way of that. Time block it. 1 hour every single freaking day this week. Can you agree with that, Brady?
I couldn't. It takes a day one to get to day two, and that is exactly what you're saying. You're never going to get to day two or day seven or day 100 if you don't do the first step. So go do it. It was word for word what we said together. So
awesome. Well, thank you so much, Brady, for being on the Master of Start podcast. Pretty pumped that you were on the show. I actually love this one. I really do.
I appreciate you having me on. So thanks for having me on.
All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I did, because I selfishly had a really, really good time making that episode. So two quick reminders from this podcast before I let you go. The power of no is often overemphasized. Okay. However, we believe, Brady and I, we believe early on in your career, yes can be even more powerful than the word no. You need to accept challenges and make yourself uncomfortable every day to constantly grow. The second thing, this week, find that one passion project or skill you've always wanted to develop and take action. Tomorrow never comes. Set aside 1 hour per day this week to focus on whatever that project or task may be. Write it down this very minute and then make that your one big thing this week. That is it. I hope you enjoyed this different type of Master of the Start podcast. Give us feedback. Subscribe. Remember, I'm watching. I see who's listening. Now I need you to subscribe. I need you to help us out. Lastly, most importantly, I hope you have a wonderful week. Make this week great. We'll see you next week on the Master of the Start podcast. Bye.